Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is a great man, Casey Seiler, state editor and Capital Bureau chief for the Albany Times Union and one of the hosts of Public Television's New York Now, a statewide political program. Welcome back, Casey. Always great to have you here.
Alan, great to be here.
Okay, so let's start with Scandalmania.
A term my coinage.
I know you have coined that term. I think it's great. Scandalmania is astounding in how close it comes to the governor without actually putting the finger on him.
Scandalmania is the general term. This outbreak of Scandalmania, which is certainly the biggest to embroil the Cuomo administration, is very disturbing. And of course, we're talking about federal and state criminal complaints that were dropped last week by U.S. Attorney for the Southern District Preet Bharara and AG Eric Schneiderman, alleging that Joe Prococo, who for a long time was one of the closest confidants of Governor Andrew Cuomo when he was Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, when he was Attorney General, and leading into his now 6.5-year-old or 5.5-year-old administration.
And I'm going to throw up if one more person mentions that he mentioned in the eulogy, so I'll do it, that he mentioned in his eulogy for his father that Prococo was the third brother.
Right, who his father perhaps loved even more than he loved Andrew.
So now for Andrew to distance himself from Prococo is not an easy task.
No, not at all. But the charges contained in the federal criminal complaint allege that Prococo essentially was bought and paid for by three developers, an energy company called Competitive Power Ventures, Core Development, which is based outside of Syracuse, and LP Simonelli in Buffalo, that essentially through a second figure, a guy named Todd Howe, who also goes back with Andrew Cuomo to the administration of his father, the former governor Mario Cuomo, that these companies essentially used Howe as a bagman to pay off Prococo in exchange for official favors, leverage, you know, force applied by Prococo to agencies, executive branch agencies that included Empire State Development and others to basically dispense favors for these companies, favors worth millions of dollars in some cases.
So here are the two closest friends he's had that we know about. And we're hearing that, the U.S. attorney says, well, no, the finger doesn't go on him yet. He doesn't even say yet. His name is not in the information. Is he in danger? Could he be named?
Well, I mean, anything's possible. As you said, and repeating what Preet Bharara said, he said there's nothing in the complaint about the governor's activity. And that's really it. He wouldn't go further. He was asked essentially to give the governor a clean bill of health, or could he give the governor a clean bill of health? And Preet Bharara would not go there. He, of course, has been very critical of the governor in the past. I think it's fair to say that Preet Bharara does not think highly of the governor's ethical performance. Bharara previously investigated the premature scuttling of the Moreland Commission on public corruption, which lasted for 9 of its 18 months and then was swapped away by the governor in exchange for sort of meager ethical fixes in the budget deal of early 2014. But the basic question is, does the governor face peril here? Currently, he is facing the conundrum of how do you, on the one hand, say, I'm a strong, hard-charging executive who loves to dig in and work the most minute gears and levers of state government in order to get things done for the people of New York, while also claiming, as the governor did last week when he answered questions out in Buffalo, when he said, I had no knowledge of anything contained in these complaints. Now, that includes what Joe Prococo and Todd Howe were up to, But it also includes the fact that these various agencies of state government were squeezed by Prococo. And Prococo, you got to remember, when Joe Prococo called you, the implication was that the governor, this was a message from the governor. Now, if Prococo essentially masqueraded as the voice of the governor, you know, what, in other words, was this Edgar Bergen or was this Charlie McCarthy talking, to use an old show business, you know, mannequin master, you know, metaphor? But basically what Prococo is alleged to have done is place a for sale sign on the executive chamber. And that is something that is hard hit to Cuomo's claimed reputation as a champion of ethics. It has cost him the sort of remaining patch of moral high ground. I said this in my Sunday column that he previously occupied.
In the Times Union, I just want to remind everybody, you want to read, if you want to read our guest today, Casey Seiler, read him in the Times Union. Go to timesunion.com. Okay, so Casey, the question here is, let's assume for a second that the governor is blameless, clueless, didn't know that his two best friends were putting a for sale sign on the state government.
Yeah, blameless equals clueless. That's an interesting way to set it up.
Blameless and clueless. For, as you say, a guy who everybody knows stays up burning the midnight oil. I'm sure you've gotten calls in the middle of the night. I know I've gotten calls in the middle of the night. You know, this is a guy who doesn't leave stones unturned. So should he, by the voters, could he, would he be held responsible for what was going on in his own administration that he didn't know about? In other words, I run 29 public radio stations. If something goes on in one of those public radio stations, something goes wrong, I know who the first person who's going to get the telephone call is, me. How about him?
Sure. Knowing about it places you in legal jeopardy if you knew about it. Not knowing about it places you in political jeopardy because everybody thinks you're disconnected and a rotten manager. Now, it is still a long way from November 2018 when the governor is next up for re-election. He says he is going to run again for a third term, but he is also aware that a third term is when everyone comes for you. You know, you've got a lot of mileage on the odometer. You've built up a lot of grudges. People get tired of you. He saw that happen to his father, which led to his, you know, stunning, I think it's fair to say, loss to George Pataki in 1994. So it's an open question as to whether or not he's going to go for it. Then again, what's the guy going to do if he's not being governor of the state of New York?
I want to tell you something that's been eating away at the back of my head here, Casey. We're looking at Bridgegate. And what happened over on the other side of the river?
Amazing similarities between these two cases.
Go ahead.
Without a doubt. Well, in the Bridgegate scandal,
yep,
you have an almost exactly similar setup where the governor is saying, I had no idea about it. Meanwhile, there is evidence coming out
at the trial. The closing of the lane.
The closing of it. Time for some traffic troubles on the GW Bridge. Basically, that Chris Christie's administration used this bogus claim of a traffic study on the George Washington Bridge to cause massive backups in Fort Lee as punishment to the mayor of that northern New Jersey city for his failure to endorse Christie. He's a Democrat. Christie was trying to line up lots of bipartisan support in his most recent reelection bid. Christie has claimed up and down that he didn't know about it. What is now coming out in the trial of two of his top aides is that he knew about it, allegedly, when it was going on. The question is, did he know about the plan ahead of time? I don't think there's been testimony to that point yet, but it might come. Christie is a former U.S. attorney in New Jersey, a federal prosecutor. Cuomo is, of course, the former attorney general of the state of New York. And these guys are now forced to contend with, at the very least, runaway bad behavior by their closest, most intimate aides.
Right. But there's something else that's been eating away at me, and that is part of all of this had to do with the Port of New York Authority, the Port Authority of New York. And there's two sides to that. We always have known there's a certain amount of tension between the governor of New Jersey, the governor of New York, who appoint their people to run the Port Authority. So I've been wondering about this. What did Andrew know about what was going on in all of this while it was all coming apart? I know one of Andrew's agents, Pat Foy, eventually said, cut it out.
Pat Foy pretty quickly said cut it out the minute he learned that essentially this traffic study or surmised that the traffic study was bogus. So Pat Foy appears to be something of an agent of good in this. There have been questions raised, I think, in the testimony as to whether or not the things that Pat Foy was saying in the press at the time comported with what Pat Foy knew or at least had pretty good evidence of as to what was actually going on. But in terms of troubles facing the Cuomo administration this week, what is coming out at the Bridgegate scandal is way, way, way down on the list.
It ain't there. It ain't there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's move to the 19th Congressional District. Very interesting stuff here. A poll out recently showed that it's virtually a dead heat between John Faso, who is to the right of the Republican Party, I think it's fair to say.
And he's pretty moderate, I would say.
I would disagree with it, but it's another whole story. and then Zephyr Teachout, who I would characterize as being to the left of the Democratic Party.
That I would agree with you on.
Right,
yes.
Okay. So I know both of these people pretty well. I know John better, actually. I've known him for years and interviewed him before the very microphone you're talking into many times. It is a fair fight district. It's a district where anything could happen. A Republican could win, a Democrat could win. And into all of this comes Trump. Trump will be leading the ticket. Is that going to hurt John Faso?
I don't think so. I don't think it's going to hurt John Faso because John Faso has been fairly deft over the course of the summer and now into the, God, happily, we're still in summer almost. Is it fall now? I guess it is fall now. In distancing himself, he was very critical, for example, in late July, early August, when Trump had his angry response to the Khan family, the Gold Star parents who were very critical of Trump at the convention, at the Democratic convention. Faso did not go to the Republican convention. He was one of many, many Republican.
Which was seen as a sign of protest.
A sign of not wanting to stand too close to a dumpster fire, perhaps, which the RNC turned out not exactly to be exact. You know, everybody predicted that it was going to be a humongous conflagration. It was not that for Donald Trump. He basically came out of it okay. Certainly not losing any support. He had a bit of a bump. But, you know, Faso has made the case that he's running for a seat in Congress. He's certainly not going out of his way to offend Trump supporters. And goodness knows, in upstate New York, there are a lot of them. But he's not embracing Trump, without a doubt.
So, putting your political analyst hat on, who do you expect to win this one?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think lots of people thought that you would have to give Faso the edge because he was better known, certainly in the sort of the upper Hudson Valley part of the district, because, of course, he was a longtime well-known state lawmaker. But, of course, he's been off that scene for a long time. He ran for governor in 2006. He was a lawyer for a firm that did lobbying. He tries to distance himself from the appellation of lobbyist, which is not surprising because it's one of the most loathed among the public, perhaps as loathed as Congress as an institution, you could say. But, you know, I think lots of people thought you would have to give him the edge coming into this. But clearly Teachout has made a good run at it. I think she's had very good TV ads up. She has a very sort of bright and peppy personality that comes through in her ads. So it's a real horse race. And you can see that it's getting national attention as well for
Absolutely.
That very reason.
Yeah, it's one of those that...
A bellwether.
When we did a thing at the Lyndon Norris Auditorium, a debate, C-SPAN came. And that tells you something.
Yeah, that was... I mean, I was one of the questioners, but
yes,
I thought it was
are.
Very good. And I thought the questions that were put together by the panel were very good, but I thought the answers were very substantive and thoughtful. It was not a dogfight. It was fierce. Everybody kind of got their licks in, you know, Teachout charging Faso with, as you put it, being a lobbyist and Faso hitting Teachout with, of course, the carpetbagger charges that have been leveled against her. But by and large, I thought it was a very substantive debate.
Here's one that's a tickler, which is that Cuomo, the governor, now says that he is willing to trade pay raises with the legislature if they give him some ethics reform.
He has not exactly said that. What he has suggested in the past is that he can't imagine that the pay commission would approve significant pay raises for lawmakers. And you have to remember there is a commission that is currently considering this question, not only for lawmakers, but also for leaders in the executive branch, including agency commissioners. The governor has groused for a long time that pay of the executive branch has been capped for so long, as it has been for lawmakers, that it's very hard to attract kind of top managerial talent and to hold them. And that is absolutely incontrovertibly true. But what the governor has said is that he can't imagine.
Do you see an awful lot of people bailing out of the legislature because they're not getting enough money?
No, because they can make money on the side, which people in the executive branch cannot do. You know, but lawmakers can make outside income. And of course, we've seen them make a ton of outside income. That's been part of the problem in some cases.
Indeed, I think it's morally corrupt, but that's another whole story, or potentially morally
corrupt. Well, you're going to have to take that up with this great state's founders, because they allowed it. They wanted a part-time legislature from people who could be, you know, everything from farmers to lobbyists on the side. But that's a whole hour-long discussion.
Nor is it right.
Yes, right. Well, and there
things
are proposals.
Things have changed since the beginning.
Right, and there are proposals to either make it a full-time legislature. There are also proposals to adopt like a congressional model where the amount of outside income you can make is capped, whether it's capped at 15%
sure.
or 20% of the base pay of lawmakers, which is currently 79 grand a year.
Closer to 100 once you factor in all of the extras.
Could be much more than 100 if you factor in what you're talking about is the additional payments known as Lulus for committee leadership
sure.
positions. And
almost
in
the New York legislature, almost everybody's a leader. So everybody gets money.
Yes, exactly. All children are above average, as they say on public radio. But where were we? Oh, yes, the pay commission. What the governor has said is that he can't imagine that this pay commission, which includes representatives of the judiciary, both houses of the legislature and the executive, would go for a pay raise unless lawmakers pass significant ethics fixes. Now, the governor got a package of ethics fixes at the end of the legislative session. Good government groups couldn't believe how meager it was. It was roundly razzed.
When you say he got it, in other words, they passed one, but it stunk.
Yeah, they passed one, but it was a tiny little weak creature, and it was passed literally on the last night of session. It was jammed out in such a way that no one could read it, much less understand it, before they were actually voting on it. Now, the stakes for the governor have increased in terms of ethics reform. In the wake of the Howe Percoco scandals, the scandals, you know, which also involve SUNY Polytechnic, which is one of the governor's prime mechanisms for upstate development in New York, now embroiled in this scandal.
Headed by Mr. Calieros, who, of
Calieros.
Course, was one of the closest associates of the governor when it came to remaking New York's economy.
Yes, yeah. The governor gave him an important position. He is now facing both federal and state charges. Calieros has now been suspended. So the stakes are much higher for the governor. If the governor wants to turn around his reputation on ethics, he needs to get something
right.
big.
Right, Casey, but I have a question for you. Don't you think that if the governor wanted to pass significant ethics reform with this legislation, despite the fact that he says they're the bad guys, they're the ones who won't do it, that he could have done it?
Oh, there is absolutely no doubt that the governor missed a massive opportunity to leverage what good government groups, you know, Blair Horner of NYPIRG, for example, called Albany's Watergate moment in the wake of the back-to-back convictions of, you know, former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, former Senate Majority Leader Dean Skelos, both of which came down at the end of 2015. And the governor, after spending a handful of minutes talking about his proposed ethics reform in his State of the State speech at the beginning of this year, did bupkis to push for ethics reform until deep into the legislative session.
So does he want it now or doesn't he? Does he really want it? Because, you know, this governor is famous for saying one thing and doing something else.
He is famous for saying he wants something very, very bad, but not working very hard to get it. And I think in terms of comprehensive ethics reform, the gap between the intention and the act, as T.S. Eliot might put it, is very, very, it's a big gap.
I want to change subjects. We only have about 4 minutes left, and I'm fascinated by the fact that two of the major players in the state have various roles when it comes to the governor. One of them is a man who I love, Tom DiNapoli, who's done a very good job. He came in under terrible circumstances. He's done a good job. They took his auditing function away from the State University, particularly Mr. Caliaros, who we have just referenced. That was disgusting, awful, bad, and a terrible thing, and showed, I think, Andrew's rapier hand in all of this. And DiNapoli is sitting there saying, I could have found this stuff if you had let me audit it, but you didn't allow me to. You took it away from me. Why in the world would the legislature have gone along with that?
Because the governor wanted them to do it, and the governor or the legislature needs more from the governor than it needs from Tom DiNapoli, who is essentially a watchdog. And legislative bodies and executives tend to look askance at watchdogs because, you know, the news is rarely good from those watchdogs. That's why they attempted to reduce the responsibilities of the controller. That's why the Joint Commission on Public Ethics, which was created by the governor and the legislature, is seen as being largely toothless. You know, just this week, JCOP had its regular meeting. Seth Agata, who is a former Cuomo counsel, who is...
Oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, he's the third executive director of JCOP and the third to come from the Cuomo administration, came out and said, well, yes, the JCOP can do better in terms of its audits of financial disclosure forms, such as the one that Joe Prococo turned in 2015 that turned out to be largely fictional. But even in its fiction, allegedly, even in its fiction, should have raised red flags all up and down the line of anybody who looked at it.
So will the dumb, stupid legislature come back and give Tom DiNapoli back his powers?
Well, I think the larger question is the state going to stop giving these big development responsibilities to entities like the two basically private organizations, Fuller Road Development and Fort Schuyler, that were essentially empowered with handling the procurement and being the pass-through for hundreds of millions, billions really, sure, of dollars in state functions, because those are the contracts that are exempt from FOIL because these organizations are essentially private deals and the controller can't look at. I think that model, the kind of SUNY poly development model, is going to be under great, great scrutiny. You've already heard John Flanagan, the Senate Majority Leader, say that there are going to be hard questions about the money torrent that's going into the Buffalo Billion in its next chapter.
And to me, the whole thing is really a disgrace. But they're going to give the governor power to take it away from these places and put it into his own development agency.
Right. This to Empire State Development is now going to take
crazy
over.
That they're punishing him by rewarding him.
Well, Empire State Development, which is a state agency as opposed to a private, you know, nonprofit
board. It's a
bunch
of nonsense.
Well, and you're absolutely right. Like, handing it off to ESD doesn't exactly solve the problem, because you see in the criminal complaint, the federal criminal complaint, and in the state complaint, that ESD was subject to pressure from top aides to the governor, like Joe Prococo. Joe Prococo was essentially calling up ESD officials and saying, hey, Core Development needs help on this parking lot development. They say they can't make enough moolah unless they get a labor peace agreement. And ESD basically did Prococo's bidding, gave Core Development, which was paying Prococo, allegedly, exactly what it wanted. So
what a tangled web.
Oh, truly.
Well, I have to say, our guest has been Casey Seiler of the Albany Times Union, an incredibly talented guy, and of New York Now, a statewide political public television program. Casey, you're always welcome back here. We love it when you come. You really make clear the turgid waters surrounding state politics. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.